Gentlemen, this week on Sunday, many of you woke up in the morning to something that happens in Israel on Sunday mornings. And that is that on Motzei Shabbos, while you're either in a hangover from Shabbos or you're eating your Malava Malka from Shabbos, or you're going to sleep because you didn't sleep enough on Shabbos, or you're watching a movie or eating pizza, in a very important neighborhood in Yerushalayim, one of the two chief rabbis of Israel gives a shiur on Motzei Shabbos. And as you know, this is a tradition from his father that he gives the shiur, and reporters come to the shiur to listen to every single word he says. Not because they want to learn Torah necessarily, Alex, but because they want to see if he slips. And if he does, you wake up Sunday morning and you find what he said. And usually they're not disappointed. They have material. Well, this week was no exception. And they found the material that they needed. What was the material that they needed? He made the following blanket statement. He said, Jews from, I believe, Tunisia, asked him if they should make Aliyah, if they should move to Israel. And he, the chief rabbi of Israel, told them, if you move to a Haredi neighborhood, you should. And if you move to a non-Haredi neighborhood like Herzliya, you shouldn't. That was the statement he made. And as you can well imagine, it was reported all week in every single website that I usually frequent, that the chief rabbi said you should only make Aliyah if you move to a Haredi neighborhood. Now, I want to take that statement that was made in a shiur and together with you ask, what do we think about it? Because he has a right to his opinion. And I'm not going to come here and say he's right, he's wrong. But I want to say, what do we think about it? All of you made Aliyah to Israel. You left communities and you made Aliyah. And the question is, what do you think about that statement? Because I believe he brought up a dilemma that's very, very cardinal to our very existence. And I'm not going to belittle it. In other words, I'm not going to go along and say, well, you should make Aliyah, all costs, that's the right thing to do, end. And I'm not going to say that he's right either. I thought he brought up a dilemma that many of us have dealt with. And this is the dilemma I believe he brought up. On the one hand, at the end of Masechet Ketubot, whoever learned Masechet Ketubot knows, at the end of Masechet Ketubot, we deal with the following issue. What's Ketubot deal with? Like any Masechet in Shas, it deals with a lot of things, but it's supposed to deal with the subject of a Ketubah. Now, a Ketubah is the amount of money that you give your wife if the marriage dissolves. At the end of Masechet Ketubot, it talks about the many women that will not get their Ketubah money, for various reasons. And one of them is, the husband wants to make Aliyah. The wife does not want to make Aliyah. Have you heard this before? Oh, I would love to make Aliyah. My wife doesn't. Then you ask the wife, she says exactly the same thing. Just opposite. I want to make Aliyah. My husband doesn't. Well, it's an ancient problem. It's right in the Gemara in Ksubos at the end. In the end of the Gemara in Ksubos, the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, and the husband wants to make Aliyah, and the wife doesn't, the husband can make Aliyah, divorce his wife, and not give her a ketubah money. She forfeits her ketubah money. And in that context, the Gemara says, La'olam, always, a person should live in Israel, even in a city that's totally dominated by non-Jews, maybe idol worshippers. As opposed to living in Chutz La'aretz, in a place with all Jews, maybe frum Jews. Or let's put it very tangible. You should live in the height of Tel Aviv with not even a shul versus living in the five towns. That's what the Gemara says, blanket, paskind in the Rambam. No controversy about it. It's clear. It's clear. Now, it's so clear that it's not surprising that when the chief rabbi made the statement he did, many people attacked him and said, you are a reformed Jew. You're no better than them. They changed the Torah, and you changed the Torah. The halacha is you should always live in Israel, even if you're going to sacrifice your religious steadfastness. But you come along and say, no, only if you live in a Haredi community can you live in Israel. So, you're a Reformed Jew, you know, You're a conservative Jew. You're changing the Torah just like those movements. And therefore, you have negated the halacha. Indeed, throughout the generations, this is not a one-time thing. This has happened many, many times. And allow me to share with you a medrash. This medrash, according to the story, and again, this may be an alleged story, I'm not sure. But this story is that one of the Regina Rebbes went to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and asked the following question. Who is Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank? Have you heard of him? Okay. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, we're talking about the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, a huge lamdan. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, I have many of his svarim at home. It's really lamdas 101. It's really a fascinating individual, and I can't say he was a closet Zionist or anything of the sort. Now, the story that I heard from Rav Meir Nohorai, who's the rabbi of the kibbutz called Masuot Yitzchak. And he told the following story, and I quote it in his name. Someone asked this very question to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Went up to him and said, hey, if a person's going to make aliyah and become non-religious, should he make aliyah or not? The person that asked the question, according to the story, was Rav Shlomo Zalman Shragai. Have you heard the name? Yeah? Alex, pretend you did. Who's Rav Shlomo Zalman Shragai? He was the mayor of Jerusalem. A religious Jew, a Hasidic Jew. He wrote letters, by the way, to Rav Soloveitchik that survived. Rav Shlomo Zalman Shragai went to ask Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank this question. And Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank comes along and quotes the following medrash to him. He doesn't take out the halacha based on the Gemara and Ksubos, which he could have. He took out the following medrash. This medrash basically says that even if you're going to do the wrong things in Israel, you should live here. And I'll quote the medrash word for word. It's a Yalkut Shimoni. Tani Rabbi Chiya. Mashal lemelech shahalach lechamat gerar v'natal banavimor. Pamachat iknitu v'nishba sheino notlan. So there was a king that used to go to a certain vacation spot and he took his kids with him. And once the kids got him mad and he said, I'm not taking you with me. And then he went to this place and he started to miss them. Vayaniskar lahem uvolche veomer halevai yeyu banayimi afalpi shemaknitimoti. It's too bad that my kids are not with me even though they get me upset. In other words, if I'm on vacation alone, there's quiet. I can rest. I can read the newspaper. I can finish a good book. I can go to a museum without my kid saying I need to go to the bathroom and I'm hungry. Well, even though all that is true, I miss them. Halevai v'yu banayimi afal pi shemaknitimoti. Too bad they're not with me even though they get on my nerves. Hadahu dichtiv miyitneni b'midbar malon ochim. So here is the actual lesson of the Medrash. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu said, God, Halevai yu banayimi kemo shayu bamidbar shayu milinim alai. Too bad my kids are not with me. We're in the middle of the 3 weeks, the 9 days, Tisha B'Av. We're not together in Jerusalem in the Beis HaMikdash. Too bad they're not with me. Like they were where? So if you would have asked me, like they were where? I would say like they were at Har Sinai. Ki'ish echad, belev echad, wanting to get the Torah. Oh, too bad my kids are not with me like they were at Yom Suf, where vayaminu b'Hashem uve'Moshe avdo. That's not what the Medrash says. The Medrash says, too bad they're not with me like they were in the Midbar when they complained. When they complained. When they did things that are wrong. Too bad they're not with me even though they got on my nerves. I continue. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu. Halevai yiyu banai imi be'eretz Yisrael afalpi shemitamin ota. I'd like my children in Israel even though they defile the land. So said Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank to Rav Shlomo Zalman Shragai, the mayor of Jerusalem. What do you want? I'm more frum than Rav Chiya? He says, even if the children defile the land, I'd like them to be with me, in the land. It says in Sefer Devarim that God is with us in the land of Israel the entire year. Einei Hashem Elokecha bo mereishit hashana ve'ad acharit shana. Throughout the year. So I want him here even if they're going to mechal Shabbos and eat nevelos atreifos. So, we can end the shir here and say, Chief Rabbi, I don't know what you're talking about. It seems like very clear the halacha and the agada, both the Jewish law and the philosophy of Judaism as brought out in the Yalkut Shimoni, make it very clear that you should be in Israel even if the price will be that moving to Israel, moving to a new culture, will result in your children or even you becoming non-frum. Okay, we can end the shir here, but I'd like to bring up the other side of the picture. And the other side of the picture is something that many of you know. Many of you know because we are Anglos living in Israel, and we've seen it with our own two eyes. And that is the following. When Avraham Avinu was told in Parshat Lech Lecha, Lech Lecha mi Arzecha mi Moladetecha mi Beit Avicha, the question is, why is it that the Torah tells us that description? God could have said, Lech Lecha El Eretz Canaan, go to Israel. Why does he go into this whole razzle-dazzle speech? Leave, first of all, Moladetecha, Beit Avicha, Me'artzecha. Why does he go through these three things? I heard from one of my premier Rebbeim, Rav Aaron Rakefet, Rothkopf. Many of you maybe have been his students. Rav Aaron Rakefet said many times that God was basically telling him, moving from culture number one to culture number two is difficult. It's challenging. You're going to leave the culture you know. You're going to leave the supermarkets. You know how to shop in and get the best prices. You're going to leave the phone company and the electric company that you know how to deal with, the banking system you're used to a totally different culture and a different land and a different language. And even if you think you know Hebrew, because you went to one of those great Zionist schools outside of Israel, when you come to Israel, you'll figure out you don't know Hebrew, because you don't know the slang. I mean, I remember not so many years ago that one of the premier principals of Israel came to Israel. I had a meeting with him, and we met in the center of town. And he told me he has a weakness for an amazing bakery in Machane Yehuda. And I love this bakery too, for one product, their rugelach. On Friday, you could see tons of people lining up, okay? You want to go there, you want to see a scene? Take people there on Friday. People come from the airport with a taxi, with their luggage on top. They stop to buy rugelach for Shabbos at this bakery. It's called Marzipan. I have never tasted rugelach subsequently as good. So the man had a weakness for the rugelach there. And he asked if we can go by before the meeting. I said, sure, it's really an amazing place. Let's go. So we go there, and the rugelach are coming out of the oven. It couldn't have been better timing. And he asks for rugelach in the Hebrew that he thought he knew. Arthur, I had to translate from Hebrew to Hebrew to the gentleman behind the counter. Okay? It went something like this. Boker Tov, Havena. The guy looked at him like he's talking Arabic. And he indeed said in Arabic, Shuhada, what does that mean? And I had to explain. Okay, then came the next part. This was the best. How much do you want? So, you know, you say a box. All right. He gave him how much he wanted in pounds. In Israel, we don't use pounds, we use kilo. You understand, this is a small little thing. Now, take that experience from the Marzipan Bakery in Machane Yehuda. Okay? The worst that can happen is you won't get your rugelach, and your wife will be happy you're not going to gain weight. That's the worst that can happen. Take that same experience and go to the bank, where you're trying to get a mortgage. Take that same experience, and then go to the electric company, and the internet company, and the cell phone company, and you're going to try with your broken Hebrew to get a good deal. It could be disastrous. And now take that same experience and go to school and go to work and go to shul. You're talking about a very difficult thing. So therefore, in Parshat Lech Lecha, God says, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This is leaving Arzicha, Moladetecha, Beit Avicha. You're changing cultures. It's going to be difficult and challenging. And there could be ramifications, and one of them may be that, yes, your children will not turn out the same as being in a familiar culture. And allow me not just to quote a drasha on the parsha. Allow me to quote a halachic source. Have you heard of the Avnei Nezer? The Chsachachov Rebbe. Have you heard the name? Have you heard of the Eglei Tal? The Eglei Tal, the Avnei Nezer. We're talking about a Hasidic Rebbe who was an amazing lamdan and very charif. Very sharp. He has sharp tshuvas. Okay? One of his tshuvas I love is a tshuva about blowing shofar in the silent Shmoneh Esrei on Rosh Hashanah. If I can paraphrase the tshuva, I'm going to spice it up a little bit, but the tshuva basically says it's a bad idea. It's a bad idea to blow shofar in the silent Shmoneh Esrei. You should only do it in Chazorat Tashatz. But then he says, Arthur, what can I do? I'm a Hasidic Rebbe. I do this for a living. This is what I have to do. That's basically his tshuva. Now, very charif, very, very, very sharp. And he has a tshuva about the following issue that I have to admit, Alex, many rabbis never answered. Here was the shaila. They were scared to answer this question. How come so many great rabbis didn't make aliyah to Israel? If it's a mitzvah to live here, and you know the Gemara and Ksubos, and there's a mitzvah to do it, so how come they don't do it? They're so machmir on Gebrachs on Pesach. They're so machmir on Hilchos. There's a mitzvah in the Torah. Why don't they do it? So you could try to explain, there's no mitzvah today. That's not the majority point of view. Why is it that so many rabbis didn't make aliyah? Why? Why did the Chafetz Chaim stay in Chutz La'aretz? Why did the Gras stay in Chutz La'aretz? Why did the great Hasidic Rebbe stay in Chutz La'aretz? Why didn't they make aliyah? Why was the big aliyah only after the Shoah? Why? So many rabbis never answered this question for, as you can well understand, political reasons. Or to be more precise, biased reasons. They're in Chutz La'aretz. They can't answer this question so easily. And I can understand them completely. I understand why they didn't answer. The Avnei Nezer answers. And this is what he explains. The mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, he says, is a mitzvah that means you're going to live normally in the land of Israel. Normally means you're going to make a living here. You're going to have money in the bank to buy food, to pay your mortgage, basically to live normally upon the holy soil of Israel. That's the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz. It's a very simple mitzvah. As a matter of fact, there's a tshuva of the Chasam Sofer that's mind-boggling. The Chasam Sofer says that it could very well be that every one of you can leave the shir right now and never put on tefillin again. You know why? Because every moment you're sitting here, you're mekayim the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz. V'ha'osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. You're in the middle of doing one mitzvah, you don't have to do another. You're in the middle of a mitzvah, you're sitting here. So that's it. Well, that means that the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz is just living normally in the land of Israel. Says the Avnei Nezer, the Sachachov Rebbe. The great Rabbeim at his time could have made aliyah to Israel, but they couldn't live normally in Israel. You want to know why? Who would go ahead and support them? A Hasidic Rebbe doesn't go out and clean the streets. A Hasidic Rebbe doesn't go to the high-tech company and play on the computer all day and be a programmer. What does a Hasidic Rebbe do? A Hasidic Rebbe sits at his tish, sits at his table, and his Hasidim support him. Where would the Hasidim support him from? Chutz La'aretz at his time. I'm not talking about today, talking about then. Therefore, he says, that's not mekayim, that's not fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, because you're not going to live normally within the land of Israel. And therefore, they didn't make aliyah until such time that they felt they could live normally in the land of Israel. So if you take the Gera Rebbe, for example, and the Gera Hasidim, they started to buy a property here in Israel. I believe to this day they're self-sufficient because they bought a property and they're self-sufficient. They have real estate. They live normally. The Rebbe lives normally in Israel in the sense of that he lives here and he's supported here. So that's what the Avnei Nezer says. If I can take that tshuva and embellish on it a bit, I would believe that to say that if you believe you're going to come to Israel and you won't be able to make a living here, to live normally here, which again, I'm not going to go into, is it practically possible? Because all of you did it. That's not my point here. My point here is, if you think you can't, and part of that is you can't raise your children in the ways of the Torah, then it's something to think about of, is it a good idea? Is it right to do? Because maybe I won't fulfill the mitzvah of Yeshiva Aretz because I won't be able to live normally. Now, I'm going to say that with a great caveat because to come to that decision, you have to be a prophet, correct? It's like you're going to sit in Chutz La'aretz, wherever it might be, in America, Canada, you're going to sit in the UK, you're going to sit in South Africa or Australia or New Zealand, I think I took all the Anglo countries here, and you're going to say, I'm going to sit here like this with my thumb, and I'm going to say, will I be able to raise my children from in Israel? Or will Efrat ruin them? Yes, no, maybe I'll have a whole lumda shashir and I'll come to a decision. How are you supposed to know? What if is the largest word in the dictionary? How are you supposed to know what's going to happen? Or I'll put it another way. How do you know if you stay in Chutz La'aretz that your kids won't assimilate and intermarry? How do you know? The answer is we don't know. We have to do our best. So there's no way in the world to know for sure that this is the answer, that's the answer. I don't know. But quite frankly, you have to think about it. And if you think about it, hopefully you put provisions in place to ensure that it happens to the best of your ability. And you still may not come out ahead. But according to that tshuva of the Avnei Nezer, in the character of the mitzvah of Yeshiva Aretz, there's what to think about if you believe coming to Israel you won't be able to live a normal life, including raise your children from. And allow me to bring a source that's scary for what I'm going to say. This is a scary 9 days, 3 weeks source. Have you read the kinos in your life? Have you read the kinos about the Crusades? 1095, the Pope says we have to make a crusade to Israel to free the Holy Land from the infidels. And they get organized and they start marching towards Israel. So on the way to Israel, they go through Jewish communities in Germany. And they say, if we have a holy mitzvah to kill the infidels, then Alex mitzvah baliyatcha al tachmitzena. If there's a mitzvah to do, don't put it off. Do it right away. Don't be lazy. Get off your chair and do it. So we're going through Jewish communities in order to get to Israel and free it from the Muslim infidels. But we got infidels right here, Jewish communities. So they went and they eradicated the communities of Megenza, Vermeiza, and Ashpira, as they started to walk through the crusade in 1096 to Israel. And they eradicated those communities. We have a miracle that Rashi, who learned in those communities, went back to France and in a way saved the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, in the middle of those kinos, Arthur, that we read on Tisha B'Av, there's a very scary scene. Scary. Read it with the English, any of the wonderful translations out there, and see that it says there that parents killed their own children. Jewish parents said that our children will not be able to withstand the terrible dilemma of converting to Christianity or dying. What we call Yahareg Ve'al Ya'avor. So we're going to do them a favor, quote unquote. This is a tragic favor. And kill them before they have to stand before that dilemma. Did they do the right thing? Did they do the wrong thing? Were they justified or not? Large conversation. I dealt with it many years ago on Tisha B'Av. I have to admit that there can be two schools of thought on this, and I'll just say it briefly. One is they were 100% wrong. You can't kill anyone. And the other is an Ashkenazi point of view. You know what the Ashkenazi point of view is? It's called presumption of righteousness. I believe that Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik used that term. Presumption of righteousness says that if they did it, it must be right. Like the Rosh Tevot Ashkenaz. You know what Ashkenaz stands for? Ein she'ilot kacha nohagim zeu. No questions, that's the minhag. Azoy git, keep your mouth shut, just do it. So that's basically what many Ashkenazi poskim when they dealt with this terrible tragedy of the Crusades, of killing your own children, they went ahead and they said, well, there's a presumption of righteousness. If they did it, it must be the right thing to do. And therefore, they try to justify it. Now, I'm not getting into that terrible, tragic, tragic part of our history in so many ways. But what do we see from that? We can infer from that that there is something in Judaism about ensuring the spiritual welfare of your children. So therefore, I can't go on and blanket say that Chief Rabbi's totally out of it. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's Reformed Judaism. There is something to, can I raise my children from in Israel? And if I think I can't, then how do I put provisions in place that, God willing, I'll do my best that it happens? Because no one's going to judge us for succeeding. They're going to judge us for not trying. I say that again. No one's going to judge us for succeeding. They're going to judge us for not trying. And therefore, I believe that there's a big dilemma here, but allow me just to end the shiur with a monkey wrench. And that is that I totally disagree with the chief rabbi saying, only make aliyah to Haredi communities. Because I believe there's a statement here that if you live in a mixed community of Jews that are non-religious, you will be influenced by them to the wrong path. Arthur, Bruce, did you ever think that if you live with non-religious Jews, you may influence them? Why is it only one way?
I wasn't told both ways. That's exactly why I was never told what non-religious Jews. I was warned about living in Gush Etzion, not with his non-religious Jews, where there are other types of Orthodox Jews.
Other types.
That's what they were worried about. They have no concern about mingling. They were no concern when it's black and white.
Interesting. 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 Very interesting. Very, very interesting. I have to admit, interesting they said that. That's a whole different conversation. But I have to admit that the bottom line is that when we talk about influencing, somehow it always is one-sided. They're going to influence me. Now, how come they're only going to influence me? Why come I can't influence them? But it's only one side. There's only one way to go.
Because the perception is we're introducing different types of restrictions in life, and they're introducing lack of restrictions in life, which from a kid's perspective is just a lot more fun. So it's true that I can tell people, why don't you eat a restricted diet and do less activities on so many days of the year? You'll have a lot of fun doing that. But and the beach, we have issues with all types of entertainment. But I don't think they're flocking to hear that perspective. I mean, some are. There's no doubt some are. It's about kids. Kids, as the song goes, they just want to have fun. And there's a lot more fun on the other side of this barrier. And that's why
I have to admit, Bruce, that I have to end now, but I will say one thing. I have to say one thing, Bruce, because I have to end. Bruce, I have to end, but I will say one thing, and that is I totally have to disagree with what you just said about kids. I have kids as well, and I see my kids, and I see their friends. I don't believe that kids have only one ideal in life, and that is to have fun. That's not the kids we have. Baruch Hashem. They have other ideals as well. We may not like all their ideals. We may not agree with everything that's important to them. But I don't believe that the children that I mingle with have only one ideal, and that is to have fun.
Well, fun is in characterizing the correct way. The correct way is freedom of choice.
Freedom of choice is not necessarily fun. It's harder.
And then again, if you're living in a firm place, there's less freedom of choice. That's all.
Freedom of choice is not fun.
No, you're actually right. You're absolutely right.
Freedom of choice is actually very difficult. Very, very difficult. Anyway, I have to end here, but gentlemen, I want to say again, the chief rabbi made the blanket statement. I totally disagree with you can only make aliyah to Haredi communities, but the very dilemma of will my children remain frum if they make aliyah is something we have to think about. And if we have any sort of doubts, we have to put provisions in place. Wishing everyone a good Shabbos and all the very best.